Well, welcome again to Two Rivers Bible Church. We're so glad that you're here this morning. Now, before we start this morning, I just want to say that, like, what you're getting today in my voice, man, is very different than what you would have gotten on Friday. Friday, I mean, I'm not lying here. Friday, I couldn't talk at all. And Marisa was about 95% out of voice as well. Some weird stuff. I don't know what was going on, but I literally went to my iPhone and I downloaded an app, actually. And this app is a monkey, and you put in what you want to say, and then you press play. And so I needed that because of the kids. And I was like, I was putting in there, "Be quiet!" exclamation point. But, you know, the bad thing about technology is that it doesn't always convey what you're trying to convey. So it has this robotic, you know, kind of voice, like, you know, "Be quiet." Like, the kids just started laughing. I was like, I mean, come on now. Are they going to be seriously? So anyway, if my voice goes out today, my apologies to you guys. So I've already been preaching since this first hour. So, you know, we started this series a couple of weeks ago, and we started talking about this guy by the name of Elijah, and in 1 Kings. And we saw this man of God who is called by God to go in front of Ahab, the king, one of many wicked kings of the time, and probably the most wicked of that time. And he's married to a queen, Jezebel, who is 10 times, you know, more evil than he is, and they integrate this worship of other gods into Israel. And God raises up Elijah and he says, "Hey, listen, man, you got to go in front of the king, and I'm going to call you to confront him, because what he's doing is not right. It's wicked." And so Elijah is called by God. He goes in front of the most powerful, influential family in the face of the kingdom, the king and his wife, and he says something that just rocks their boat. He says, "Hey, listen, my God is greater than yours, and it's not going to rain until God says it's going to rain." Now, the importance of that is that they're worshiping a god by the name of Baal, and Baal is the weather god. It's the weather god, right? And he says, "My God is greater than yours, and it's not going to rain until God says so." And then you would think there's going to be a showdown, you know, a fight. Finally, the fight is here. That's not the way it kind of follows, you know. God says to Elijah, "You got to go now." He takes him to the Kerith Ravine. And that was the first message. And we talked about how God took him to a place of isolation and pain. Because before God can use you publicly, he has to first break you down public, privately. And that's what he does with Elijah. He breaks him down. He breaks his heart, and he creates a heart of dependency. He's now having to depend on God and God alone. And if you remember, God feeds Elijah through some ravens. He brings bread and meat through these ravens in the morning and the evening, and God provides for him, and Elijah depends on God. And then finally the water runs out because, you know, there's no rain going on. And God says, "I'm going to take you to the hometown of Jezebel, where she grew up, where she played as a little girl, where she would have looked out the window and seen all these statues of all these false gods. I'm going to take you there, the most dangerous place on earth, and they won't find you in the most dangerous place on earth." So God takes him there. He protects his life in those moments, which is modern-day Lebanon. That's where he takes Elijah. And God teaches Elijah, this is last week, he teaches him the principle of multiplication, generosity. He teaches him generosity, how to be a generous person. And today, the showdown. Today's the showdown, finally. 3.5 years later, and now you're going to see the showdown between Elijah and the king once again. I want you to go to 1 Kings chapter 18. As you're going there, I want to ask you a question, actually. If you look at your sermon notes, you have a blank in there, and it says, "It's time to fight for," and there's a blank. This morning, I want you to be sensitive to what God is doing in your heart, and I want you to grab that pencil or that pen, and I want you to put in there what God has you fighting for. What does God wants you to fight for? For some of you, it might be that God is saying, "I want you to fight for your marriage," and you would put that in there. Maybe some of you, it's, "I want you to fight for your relationship that you're in right now." I want you to put that in there. Maybe he's saying, "I want you to fight for your sexual purity." Maybe you would write that in there. "I want you to fight for your finances." Maybe he's saying, "I want you to fight for your work." Maybe he's saying, I want you to fight for your walk with God. I want you to write it in there. Write it in there, because this morning we're going to talk about how do you fight for things that matter most. I'm not saying how to fight against. I'm not saying that you got to fight with your spouse. You got to fight with your coworkers. You got to fight with your boss. You got to fight with your parents. You got to fight with your kids. And that's not what I'm saying. You got to fight for, not against. You got to fight for, not against. And Elijah's going to teach us that this morning. It's interesting, as I was preparing for this message, I was kind of brushing up in some of my history. You know, being here in Gonzales, everybody knows about Come and Take It, right? If you don't, shame on you. You know, so here you have these men, and they have this little cannon, you know, and so, which, no, I shouldn't, I was going to ask, you know, who here has a relative that was part of that era, but here you have these guys, they have this cannon, and they're gifted this cannon so they can scare the Indians, right, the Native Americans. And one day, the Mexican military shows up, and like, we want the cannon back. And they're like, come and take it. Right. Oh, I almost wonder, how do they say it? Like, come and take it, or come and take it? So it's just come and take it, right? And that started the whole Texas independence. Fast forward, 188 men are on the Alamo. And the armies that are coming in from Mexico, who had just gained their independence from Spain, are coming in because they have heard that Texas wants their independence too. Yeah, baby, we do. And so they get in here in San Antonio, and it's they're outnumbered. They're heavily, heavily outnumbered. And what I find so fascinating about that story is what Colonel Travis did the moments before the attack. And Colonel Travis grabbed his sword, he pulled it out, and he drew a line. And he said this, those prepared to give their lives in freedom's cause, come over to me. So he draws that line, and he says, those who want freedom, step across that line. As a matter of fact, everybody but one, the guy who we know the story, you know, crossed the line, you know. Even Bowie, Colonel Bowie, who was, the creator of the Bowie knife, he, who was sick with pneumonia, got carried with his bed over the line. Oh, they knew what to fight for, what they were fighting for. And they were willing to cross that line and say, I will give my life for what I hold most dear in my life. And what I'm asking you this morning is to do likewise. What is the thing in your life that God is saying, I want you to fight for this. I want you to fight for this. And I want you to put it in that blank. I want you to put it in that blank. Go to 1 Kings chapter 18. Verse 1. Here's Elijah. He's fighting for his country. And he's fighting for his God. That's what he's fighting for. And it says, after a long time, in the third year, the word of the Lord came to Elijah. Go and present yourself to Ahab, and I will. It's important. Underline it in your Bible. I will send rain on the land. So Elijah went to present himself to Ahab. Don't miss it, folks. This is it, the showdown. This is the showdown. This is what we've been waiting for. 3.5 years. And now the moment has arrived. This is like an old Western, you know? Like, this is like a draw kind of deal. This is it. This is the story. The showdown is here. And this is where we get our first principle, and that is this. No matter what you're fighting for, you got to remember these things. The first one is this. You got to rely on God's timing. You got to rely on God's timing. Either to fight or to flight. Either to fight or to flight. And that's what we see here. For 3.5 years, Elijah has had to flight. He's had to say, not yet. I can't yet fight for it. It's not my time yet. This is not the timing for it. I'm not going to fight for that thing, for my God and for my people. I'm going to have to wait until God releases me of that and he calls me to fight. And for some of you, you're going through those kind of struggles where you think you just don't know. You're trying to wrestle with it. You're trying to think, you know, is this the season to fight for my, you know, relationship, or is this the season to keep it cool? Is this the season to fight for your finances, or is this the season to keep it cool? Is this your season to fight, or is this your season to just kind of settle down? God is teaching you something. He's going to teach you something you've never thought you'd learn in your life. because maybe for some of you, you're not ready for the fight. And that's okay, folks. Maybe you're ready for God to shape you so you can be ready for the fight one day. You know, I was thinking about ketchup. I don't know why, but I just was. We eat a lot of it, yeah. It's like, you know, I don't know if folks remember when ketchup was in one of these bottles, right? So you're like, oh, man, that's old school. He's bringing old school. Well, you know that the glass bottle, it flows at a rate of 0.028 miles per hour. 0.028 miles. So if you do this, you know, it takes 0.028 miles per hour, you know? Boring. So, or frustrating, right? Depends. Your fries are getting cold and stuff. But research has shown that the turtle, Galapagos turtle, goes faster than ketchup does in a bottle. It goes at 0.16 miles per hour. What's my point with that? Is that I don't know if you're a turtle or ketchup, but you might be that God has you running in a very soft space, a pace. You know, he's saying, hey, wait a minute. I want you to take it easy. There's going to be a time for you to settle down, let the ketchup run down, right? You're going to be used at some point. Right now, it's not the time. And that's okay if that's God saying that to you. And then it might be like, hold on, buddy, because it's going to be like, God is going to just pop it out. It's going to be a whole bunch of ketchup. You're going to be fighting for whatever relationship or whatever thing you're fighting for. It might be your kids. It might be your walk with God. Where are you at? Are you in a season of wait, or does it go? Second thing we're going to see is that you got to keep in mind that you got to confront the enemy, and you got to be decisive. You got to confront the enemy, and you have to be decisive. Go to verse 17. I'm going to show you that from verse 17. Verse 17. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, "Is that you?" And check this out. This word is a pretty interesting word. "Is that you, troubler of Israel?" It's like, you got to be kidding me. Here's the king saying, "Is that you, you troublemaker?" The word troubler there is the word that is used for snake. So it's another way of saying, "Is that you, you snake? You showing your face here? Is that you, you troublemaker?" Because remember, 3.5 years ago, he said, there's not going to be any rain. So as he would have been walking in near the palace, as he would have been walking in to the king, he would have seen some, you know, dead animals, perhaps even dead people. The stench, all that stuff would have been in there. So King Ahab sees him. It's like, here comes the troublemaker. Is he going to take it? Let's check it out. Verse 18. "I have not made trouble for Israel." Oh, yeah, baby. Give it to him. Elijah replied, "But you and your father's family have." Keep in mind, he's talking to the most powerful family in the face of the kingdom. He says, "I didn't cause the trouble. You did." It says, "You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." The first week we talked about that, didn't we? The part of the thing that Jezebel brought is that she started housing all these priests, and they had all these temples all over the kingdom, and she housed all these priests. She was a very religious person, wrong religion, but a lot, very religious person, and she had them eating at her table, staying there. She's got at least 150 of those priests, and Elijah says, "Bring them all to me, bring them." About to confront the enemy. Verse 20. "So Ahab sent word throughout Israel and assembled the prophets at Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, 'How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him.' But the people said nothing. Then Elijah said to them, 'I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left.'" I'll pause it for just a moment, because that's not true. He's believing a lie, you know? And this is the man of God that's believing a lie. By the way, in 2 weeks, I'm going to talk about depression. You know what's the source of that depression? That one lie. That he thinks he's alone. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks, so. So he says, I'm the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. So here he is, the showdown, it's here. You see, you got to confront the enemy. Whatever that thing you put in that space in your insert, your sermon notes, you're going to have to fight for it. And there's a real enemy that doesn't want you to fight for it. But listen, you can't get confused here, because the enemy might not be the person you think it is. The enemy might not be the person you think it is. The enemy might not be your spouse. The enemy might not be your kid or your parents. The enemy might be the way you're thinking. That might be the enemy. The enemy might be the evil one who seeks to destroy. So it's not always a person. You know, as I was reading some historical stuff, which I don't commonly do, but I was reading about Cortez, you know, Hernando Cortez. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Hernando Cortez came from Spain, and he came with 11 ships, and he came into the shores of Veracruz, Mexico. And before he got to Mexico, Mexico hadn't been conquered yet, and it was primarily ruled by the Aztec Empire, Montezuma was the leader. And so Cortez came into the scene to these people, and they won. They conquered Mexico, all of it, you know. And historians look at that, and there's multiple reasons why they say they did that, but I think there's one main reason why they won. When they got to the shores, you know what Cortez did? He looked at the 11 ships, and he burned them all. So if you're any one of the 600 people that are getting there, and you look back and you're seeing every single ship burning, guess what? There's no plan B. Either you win or you're toast. That's right. Either you win, and there's no sense of indecisiveness. And that's the same thing with your marriage, with your parenting, with your finances. You know, where are you at? You can't be indecisive. You're either in or you're out. You can't have it both ways. You know, in your marriage, you can't have it both ways. You're either in or you're out. If you're in a relationship, you're headed towards marriage, you're either in or you're out. But don't vacillate between both of them. And here he confronts these prophets, these priests, and he says, you know, he brings them all to the scene, and he brings all of Israel, and he says, you guys have been vacillating. You've been going, you know, here and there. He says, believe in something. Believe in something. What are you holding on to? What are you holding? You know, there's something to be said when you just cling to Jesus, when you just cling to God, versus just kind of being on the fence and just saying, you know, maybe I will trust him with my finances, or maybe I will trust him with my marriage. Not anymore. Or maybe I'll trust him with my parenting, and then you're like, no, not really. Right? I've mentioned this before, and it came up in the Spanish group a couple years ago in 2006. A couple of years, yeah. It's been a while, hasn't it? And some of you guys have heard this. We got invited to go to this lake house, and it was going to be fun, right? A lot of you know, I don't know how to swim. You know, poor me, I know. Bring the ball in. Yeah. You know, if I get thrown in a pool, my kids are more likely to save me than me them. And so I was invited. Four couples were invited to go to this lake house. And our boss, new boss at the time, was an adventure kind of guy. He loved adventure. It was if his life was at stake, he was going to be there. I mean, he was crazy. I mean, even for somebody who trusts in Jesus, I mean, this guy was crazy. And so, but he's my boss, so I got to, you know, go along with my boss, right? So he said, hey, anybody want to go out in a boat, you know? And I'm like, I should say no, but he's my boss. Yeah, I'll do it. And so all of us went into the boat, and we're going in this boat, you know, and it's fun. Marisa's